Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Soraya. How you doing?
I'm in isolation. What
Still in isolation.
about
Going a little stir crazy, I gotta say, but
Well, you've got fun visitors in your house.
I do. My
My house is
grandbabies.
just filled with me and the cat, books and music, so we're all going stir crazy.
I have been taking advantage of this time to catalog and store my CD collection. I have about 7,000 CDs that have been in boxes, primarily. Most of them have been in boxes for the last 10 to 12 to 15 years since we were moving around. But we've been in this house for 12 years, and some of those boxes haven't been opened yet. So I'm going through those and putting some of those away. I've got some good CDs, Soraya.
What is the thing you were most surprised to find this week when you opened a box?
There was a few of them, but I was surprised how many Counting Crows CDs I have. There's probably
Well, anyone who knows Jeff knows he's a big Counting Crows fan,
Yeah,
so
there's
I'm
probably
not too surprised by that.
I think there's about 80 Counting Crows CDs that I have, mostly bootleg stuff. But
Ooh, naughty, naughty bootleg.
yeah, but the probably the funnest one that I found was Lloyd Cole. I threw on some Lloyd Cole and the
Oh, Lloyd
Commotion CD.
Cole and the Commotions.
So good. But we're not talking about Lloyd Cole today.
No, we are talking about first of all, newly released on Omnivore, Game Theory. And it's on a beautiful LP and CD and digital download available now. But it's a real I mean, I like this
Me
one a
too.
lot.
Me too.
And it's an interesting collection of demos and covers and some home recordings. I mean, I think it was really well curated. And this is Game Theory Across the Barriers of Sound, and they've added postscript to it. So it's just a little different.
Well,
And
unfortunately,
the vinyl is colored, right?
the one I have is black.
Yeah,
It's black
I don't know
vinyl,
why I thought it was
I know, I thought it
colored.
was too. I thought the same thing when I got it was black. There might be colored version, but the version I have is black vinyl. I ordered mine from Amazon, but you can get it directly from Omnivore. And unfortunately, we can't talk to Scott Miller, the main front man for Game Theory. We lost him to his personal demons a few years ago, but there is somebody that we can talk to that is on this album.
And who might that be?
Our buddy Michael Quercio from the 3 o'clock.
Course.
So Michael has a few songs that he's co-written, and he was a part of the band during this period. But Soraya, I did want to share something with you from the liner notes real quick before we give Michael a call.
Sure.
There's a couple quotes on here from some different people, and one of them I thought was really interesting and really to the point regarding Scott's style is a quote that was from Doug Gillard. He's from tons of bands, but Guided by Voices and Not a Surf are two bands that I like that Doug plays in. And he's got a couple paragraphs, but I just wanted to read the short first paragraph that he wrote. He says, "The music of Scott Miller defies simple categorization. His distinct approach to songwriting employed unexpected yet catchy chord combos, odd measured phrasing, and unforgettable melodies. His vast knowledge of music is evident in the Game Theory Loud Family catalog, and no one else touched on some of the subjects that his lyrics did." And I thought that was a perfect paragraph to describe Scott and the way his approach to songwriting. But anyways, I say we get started and give Michael a call.
Let's do it. Hi, this is Soraya.
And this is Jeff.
Our podcast is called Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme,
A podcast where the two of us play music that we like and share anecdotes and background about the tunes.
We hope you'll join our conversation. And without further ado, agrubiar.
Let's get groovy.
Groovy. Groovy. Groovy.
All right, let's get groovy with Michael Quercio. Good morning, Michael. This is Jeff and Soraya. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, hey, is it noon already? There
Oh,
it is. All right.
Oh, I didn't say. Oh, you said 11. We said 11. Okay, that's cool.
I moved it up a little. Sorry about that.
Yeah. 11's good.
Awesome. This is a good time for you?
I was like, yeah, fine.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking our call today, Michael. As we had
Sure.
talked to you earlier about, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about the new Game Theory release, which you were a big part of, actually. There's a few songs on here that you've written, co-written, played on. But I wanted to tell you, I don't know if you knew this, Michael, but my introduction to Game Theory was because of the 3 o'clock and one of the editions of the fan club, the Paint Box. It noted that you were the producer of a band called Game Theory with their EP Distortion. And I immediately went
Right.
to my record store that day to get that. So how did you get involved with Game Theory and Scott Miller in the first place? Because you've had a long history with them.
I had never, their manager, who was actually financed their early records, it was his idea. I guess, he liked the 3 o'clock and he thought, well, gee, I wonder if Michael Caruso will produce this. I don't know where he got the idea that I'd never produced anything, but he knew a guy, the guy that was managing us, John Silva, and I think contacted him. I think they were and said, hey, would Michael be interested in this? And I think John just asked me, hey, would you be interested in producing a band? And I thought, they're like, to Northern Cal, they'll fly up to Northern Cal. Oh, I don't know. Well, I didn't have anything going on, so I just thought, well, sure. And so I knew from working with Earl Menke what production was. You kind of, give people your opinion of things, and you kind of, talk about sound and sonic things. And I kind of knew that. I mean, I was like 20, but, I thought I knew that. So that's really how that happened. And right away, Scott and I became, we just really clicked, sense of humor. And right away, we just became very instant friends. And that lasted throughout the quite a while.
Yeah, so I thought that EP was amazing, Distortion. I went back and got their earlier EP, Pointed Accounts of People You Know, and then everything after that. So you were involved with Game Theory for a while, and before you became a semi-permanent member of the band, because I know on what I think is their best record, Real Nighttime, that you're involved with that a little bit. I believe you played on a song or two.
That was the one that came after the one I produced, and they got Mitch Easter to produce that. He started his dealing with them, Mitch Easter from the Let's Active, and they still wanted me to come up to help with backing vocals and things. And I went up there, and it was a real neat studio, a 16-track studio with a mixing board that it was neat. The mixing board was the same thing that Grand Funk Railroad did "We're an American Band" on, so Scott was
Wow.
really thrilled with that.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And so yeah, so I went. I sang. There's some song, a lot of songs I sang backup on that, and it's a wonderful record. It was a kind of like Scott's. It was the same band that is on. It's the same band members that are on the Distortion EP.
Okay.
So I knew all those guys. It was that after that record that the band broke up.
Yeah, that version of the band. Yeah.
Apparently, they did the dist. He was the band on the Distortion, and then the band on Real Nighttime. Like I said, same guy, same four people. But then they went on a tour for that Real Nighttime album, and apparently, it was kind of grueling and weird, and so they broke up. Which really happens a lot in rock and roll. Right after the tour, they broke up. But anyway, but I you know, I went I so I went up there and I sang on the song 24 and the song Real. There's a number of songs on that record. It's a wonderful record. It's kind of like a. In a way, it's kind of a solo thing for Scott because, I think everyone was,
Oh.
well, it wasn't so much. He was just very much in control, and which was great. And by the time it came out, they were already getting notoriety from the EP, and then it got a lot of acclaim. Real Nighttime, and when they went on that tour, the four of them, they stopped in New York to pick up an award. From I forget, it was kind of something pretty prestigious for the best new band or something,
Wow.
and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who are already putting out there, were the MCs or something, and then the story is that it was time to announce Game Theory, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers just said, and the winner is Red Hot Chili Peppers, and everybody starts laughing. And then under their breath, they say, Game Theory.
Oh, God.
So it was kind of that kind of crap, you know, screw those assholes, you know. And so it was like, you know, bands, you know, that kind of stuff went on for them. So it's you know, it's disheartening, that kind of stuff. And but that's a really great lineup there. It was a real special, the Distortion and Real Nighttime lineup. I think is a real special bunch of players on that. So
yeah, I know. I was saying earlier that my introduction to Game Theory was you via the 3 o'clock fan club paint box, but Game Theory was my introduction to Big Star, because on this album, mm-hmm. Real Nighttime, they did a version of the Big Star song "You Can't Have Me," yeah. And I had to find out where that was from when I found out it was a cover. So it's mm-hmm. it's like a domino effect of one introduction leading to another, leading to another, leading to another. So.
And when I went up to produce the Distortion record EP, we were hanging around, and Scott had mentioned Big Star, and I said, "Who? I'd never heard of them." And he's like, "What do you mean who?" I'm like, "I have no idea who this group is." You know, it's Alex Chilton, that guy, you know, from the I don't know who the Box Tops are. You know, the guy with the soulful voice, you know.
Right.
And then he played me September Girls. And I literally just fell off my chair. I was just like, whoa, that's the same, number one, that's the same singer?
Yeah, I know.
If you listen to the Box Tops, you listen to Big Star, it's like totally, he's singing way in a higher range in Big Star than he does in the Box Tops. And
yeah.
Anyway, I just thought it was so great. I go, oh my God, so Scott gave me, he had another copy, he gave me the copy of Radio City, his second copy.
Oh, wow.
So I came home with that, and I really fell in love with the band. And I just, I'm very opinionated, and just because something's popular, you know, I'm not necessarily going to like it, you know, or something's hip. But I just thought they were great. I really thought they were great. And I was like, Scott, I really liked his, I just was a real fan of his songwriting, Scott, and all the stuff that he liked was stuff that I liked. And I just was a huge fan of his, as much as it being a friend, you know. I have lots of friends that I, you know, maybe I'm not as huge fan of of theirs, you know, artistically. But Scott, no, I was just like, whoa, you are good, you know. You hit all the, your stuff hits all the things in my head, you know.
Nice.
You hit all my spots.
So, Michael, do you still own
very
that?
Very few people can hit all my spots, like, you know. Anyway, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So, do you still own that copy of Radio City that Scott gave you?
Yes, I do. Yes,
wow.
I do.
Nice.
Michael, I find it really interesting, your comment about that you really like Scott's songwriting style, because before we got you on the call, Jeff and I were just kind of commenting and about the release from Omnivore. And one of the things that just stands out to me as I was listening to it and just kind of jotting down notes, you two are so in sync. The two of you, when you sing together, and I'm thinking specifically of the cover of Forget All About It. This really sweet harmony, and you know, here we have two strong songwriters, two strong musicians, and then two strong singers. I mean, to me as a listener and as a fan, I find it so interesting that you guys were so in sync on so many levels. Did you enjoy
we just were naturally without figuring it out, we just naturally kind of went to those places with our voices, or you know, I think it's why we became friends, and you know, we just clicked. I mean, we're different people, but also very similar in, mm-hmm. in ways. And we just really clicked with the guy, you know, and in so many ways.
I love that.
So many songwriters, like I've mentioned before, that they've got a lot of, you know, some of them become very popular. They've got a lot of, their songs are very clever, and they've got a lot of clever chord changes, but it just doesn't, is it get to the fucking chorus, you know? Scott always got to the fucking chorus, you know?
Yeah.
You got to give, that guy always got to the chorus, and so many people don't. Anyway, go ahead.
No, but you're right, though. He had a very clever style of songwriting, but also, I guess he what did you say? He touched all your buttons.
Yeah. There's so many people out there that are, got way more popular, but they don't touch the buttons to me, the way Boy Scott did.
Get to the chorus.
Yeah, get to the fucking chorus. Eric Carmen from the Raspberries got to the fucking chorus. In fact, all his songs are the chorus. I love that guy.
Nice. So I'm really interested about this period of the band. It represents, for the most part, around 1989, 1990. And I'm really glad that Omnivore put this out, because I never thought we would have seen some of this stuff. And there's quite a few periods of Scott's career, even within Game Theory, with the different lineups and whatnot. And then, of course, Loud Family. And this music that we have here on this release is kind of the transition period from the Game Theory period of Scott's career to the Loud Family, and it's transitional. My understanding is the 3 o'clock had called it a day, and then you were available, and you kind of became a full-time member of Game Theory, which kind of morphed into Loud Family. Is that what happened?
We were planning somehow, some way to start a new band. We weren't going to be Game Theory. And he came to me and said, I think we should be called the Loud Family. And I was like, like Lance Loud, the Loud Family, that, the early 70s PBS thing. And I was like, and we were kind of, I was like, that's cool, but I've got a great name, Permanent Green Light.
Oh,
and he's
wow.
Like, well, that's a cool name. So we were the groups we were going to start. We were kind of, I like this name. That would have been the group. One of those names would have been the group that Scott and I and Joe and Gil would have been. We went out as Game Theory because they were still lucrative and touring.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? There was, we did a lot of the clips of it are on, not too long after we were working up new stuff and starting to make demos and things and recordings, that the opportunity came to go and do a tour of the Northwest, hitting San Francisco, Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, Portland, the usual spot, Seattle, up to Vancouver, and all at universities. And it was very lucrative. The universities were paying. For the time, I think they were given like $5,000 or $6,000 a show, or it was very lucrative. So we went and did that as Game Theory, and did the songs and that, and that's kind of how that happened. I remember it was so lucrative that on top of renting the van and the hotel room, we all got our own hotel room. We all traveled in the van. And on top of that, after every show, Scott would walk in like a mafia boss and like just throw money down on the bed. I remember the first time he did that, he just had a wad of cash in his hand. And I'm like, what's this? I expected, we'd get a little per diem to eat, I didn't think we'd get, and he just started counting out cash. And I'm like, what's this? He goes, this is your take.
Wow.
I get paid too. And he's like, yeah. So like after every show, he just come in with a wad of cash and like throw money on the bed. I'm like, cool.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was great too. But if we had stayed together, if it had worked out, I think we would have became, I don't know what we would have, but as it turned out, it's just the distance and the logistics, it just didn't last. So, he did go start the Loud Family and I did go start the Permanent Green Light, just with different people.
So was that what? Because he was located farther north. You mentioned
San Francisco,
the
LA. California is a big, long, a big, long state.
Right, right.
It's really two states.
Yeah, or three. We tried to do that for a little bit.
Or it sounds three, like, yeah. So it just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. It's just the distance was just, it was too much.
But you guys remained friends, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
So we wanted to touch on some of the songs that are on this new release. Several of them are early versions or demos that eventually were part of the Loud Family's debut release, Plants and Birds and Rocks and Things. There's a live version of Sword Swallower, an early version of Aerodorillia. Jimmy Still Comes Around is on this. Take Me Down to Hulu, Idiot Son, Inverness. There's Even You. So there's quite a few. But one song that really caught mine and Soraya's ear was track 2, My Free Ride. When we hear the chorus, both Soraya and I, we were talking, we're like, this is Michael. Even if I didn't...
Yeah, somebody else said that.
Yeah, yeah, that is signature.
Well, there was a mix-up with Omnivore. The track should be Curcio Miller, rather, but it's written on the record as Scott or and his name first, but actually the majority of the song is written by me. Scott wrote the... they said they're going to fix that, but Scott wrote the na-na-na-na-na, that is what Scott wrote on the song, and then everything else I wrote. I wrote that song down here in L.A. I think after I got off the phone with him, I think he said, well, let's get some songs. Do you have any songs? And I said, oh, yeah, I got songs, but I didn't. So when I got off the phone, I do that a lot. So when I got off the phone, I was like, yeah, I better have a song. I think I was going to go up there in a week or something, I better have something to show. And then that's when I wrote that on the floor of my bedroom.
This song has your imprint. I mean, it's like a fingerprint of you and the chorus, the arrangement, everything. We just hear a lot of you in it.
Yeah.
And,
You know, when you know a song, when I hear the guy, when I hear anything like Roy Wood from The Move and in the early ELO, I can definitely tell when he wrote the song. He just, I can hear that. No matter who is singing it, I can just hear, that guy. I can hear that guy, telltale mark, So I guess that's kind of the same idea,
Yeah, I need absolutely no convincing your part in this. it came on and I'm like, Michael.
But I wanted to, I didn't want to, in the band, I was done with singing.
Okay.
I didn't want to be a lead singer anymore. And I came right out, and that was a deal. Look, I'll write and stuff, but you got a great voice. You do it. I'm just sick of the bad, lousy monitors. I'm sick of the sore throat, the paranoia. I'm sick of the rock critics. I'm done with it. I don't want to do it anymore. And he's like, okay, that's cool. So that's why I insisted that he is going to sing it. I'll do some oohs and ahs, but I just wanted to stand in the back and, drink a beer. those guys in the band, the bass player just gets to stand in the back and, have his beer on the amp, Yeah. Don't have to worry about anything.
Bill Wyman.
I wanted to be that guy.
You want to be Bill Wyman.
Yeah, I want to be that guy. And it come in for a little songwriting so I can make a little extra money here and there. But I was done. I was done being the front guy.
Sounds like.
And then I go Purple Line and then there I am again, At least that time, that one, I made sure that Matt was half the guy. So I only had to do half of the stuff.
Nice.
But that's how the Game 3 stuff, that's why Scott is singing that. Because, you're singing it.
Right. Well, I skipped over the opening track, which is a cover version of the Beatles' All My Loving.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day. And I'll send all my loving to you. I'll pretend that I'm kissing.
I get accused on our podcast of too much love. Everything we have on here, I love, which is the reason why we do the podcast. I only want to talk about stuff that I love anyways. But right. I'm not super fond of All My Loving starting off the record. To me,
you're not the first person to say that, oddly enough.
Well,
you're not the first person to make that comment to me.
Well, the
I took it as Dan Ballard, who was the guy that compiled everything. I thought it was kind of a quick little postcard from the other side.
Yes.
Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of like a little, like, you know, I'm not in this world anymore, but love you guys. I thought that's what he meant by starting the record out with that.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me, but... As a Scott Miller fan, like, to me, his songwriting is what makes him stand alone. Right. Is definitely his songwriting. And he has a very unique songwriting style. We mentioned chord changes, and that's definitely one of the things that he's noted for. And like you mentioned, he fucking gets to the chorus. So it's his songwriting. Right. So In my mind, I wanted to start off with something that would represent his songwriting. But it's a really interesting cover. It's very touching. Like he did with Real Nighttime on the CD version, there's a cover of I Want to Hold Your Hand. So I get his love for the Beatles and that being there. But anyways, I just wanted to get your take on that being the opening track. And
that's when I first played. A while ago, way before this came out, Dan Valor, the guy that put it together, gave me a CD of his conception of what it would be. And he started it out with that. And right away, that's what ran through my head. Oh, okay, he's going for this kind of, you know, I can see what he's doing, you know.
Okay.
Close Your Eyes, you know, I mean, the Beatles song, you know.
So were you part of that curating? Was he running ideas off of you?
No, I didn't have anything to do.
It sounds like he was. Could have been using you for a sounding board.
I just thought maybe somebody would ask me something. I did find out that, maybe about a year ago, I found out, okay, this is actually going to happen. And so I just figured somebody would get a hold of me. And then the next thing I knew, it was all done and wrapped up. And and then, you know, people from Wilco or something were saying stuff. So,
yeah.
So, whatever. But,
yeah. So can we talk about a couple other tracks? Soraya mentioned the Todd Rundgren cover, Forget All About It, which is it's a duet between you and Scott.
Yeah. So, well, on the Naz version, Stukey sings the first verse. And if you listen, that's Todd singing the second verse. So that's why I did that, because we were doing that live. I think we were just in Scott. He had a studio apartment, you know, with you remember the because that's all done on those, you know, four track cassette deck things.
Right.
Yeah.
And we were just goofing around. He said, "Oh, let's do a version of Forget About It." And I was like, "Okay, then I'll sing the Stukey part, and then you got to sing the second verse, which is the Todd, you know." And he's like, "Okay, so that's how we did that."
Okay.
And then I remember all the harmonies. I just loved the song and remembered all the harmonies. All the falsettos on top of falsettos. So that was all just Scott and I, which was really no problem. That's kind of our bag. So I thought that came out really good. I had forgotten we had done that. When I heard it, I was like, oh, wow, that's cool.
The harmonies on that are just sweet with your two voices, and knowing that it was just, you know, kind of a home recording and
just an afternoon, just an afternoon goofing around, you know.
Love that.
Had a day before we had to leave for go do something, so we just did it.
Michael, and what about the song Water?
Let me be this time.
What can you share with us about that song?
I wanted to do it was coming trying to do a Game Theory a Christmas cassette to send to the fan club members. So he wrote a little. We did it was like a little play where we all were these characters in the play, and then there would be songs, and the character was and the theme of the thing was saving the whales and the Christmas of. Christmas saving the whales or something silly. And so Scott wrote some stuff and then I go, okay, I'm going to write something for it's whales, water, you know, whales are in water. So I wrote the song, that song Water, just for that little cassette.
I understand that you are Emily and Gil's son, Dennis, in this little play.
Yeah,
that...
I play Dennis. I play Dennis. Yeah. In the little teleplay that we did. Yeah.
We also wanted to ask you a little bit about another track on here, and it's a cover version in one of probably, if not Soraya's favorite band. Wait, Soraya, were you a fan of Naked Eyes?
This is a song made famous by Naked Eyes.
This fool's gold stacked up all around him, from a killing in the market on the wall. It truly left King Midas there as they found him in his counting house, where nothing counts but more. And he thought he heard the echoes of a penny whistle bend and the laughter from a distant caravan and the brightly painted light of circus wagons in the sand fading through the door into summerland.
Not of Naked Eyes, but I was definitely a fan of the Monkees.
Okay. So on the...
I think that the first Naked Eyes album, the first one, you know, with Promises and... Always Someone There to Remind Me is the best album of the 80s. I think that's like my favorite 80s record. I love that record.
Okay, now I gotta re-listen to that.
Me too.
Okay. And when I say 80s, I mean classic, you know, synth pop 80s kind of stuff, you know what I mean?
Well, the funny part is on the live version of The Door into Summer, which is a Monkees song, you introduce it and you say, what did you say? I wrote down what your little comment was. You said, this is a song made famous by Naked Eyes, you said. And then you guys go into The Door into Summer, the Monkees song. So is that just something you came up with at the top of your head?
We were always goofing around. I think there was some joke about Naked Eyes or something, you know, before we went on stage or something. And that's... I think I just made the joke. I think it was probably connected to some in-joke we had.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's very like you to say something funny or something sarcastic.
Something sarcastic, funny, off the cuff.
Right. The funny part I found is when you guys did an awesome version of the song. I really love this version. And then at the end of it, it sounds like Scott's trying to clarify. He says,
thanks, that was actually by the Monkees for historical accuracy.
Yeah, that was just Scott, because Scott was very, he has a very computer, he like wrote computer programs.
Wow.
You know, he was also a really, really smart guy on top of being, you know, a really talented artist. He was a really smart guy. He wasn't just some rock guy. So I think when you have that kind of mind, you really, you know, even though you're really into humor and stuff, you still have to clarify.
Okay.
Whereas I'm just, you know, I'm like, you know, keep the joke going. But he Scott's personality is very, we got to clarify this, you know, so that's him clarifying.
Okay, yeah, I got a kick out of that.
Okay, so if, you know, we're kind of moving down in the sequence of the tracks, then we get to, we wanted to ask about Come On.
Hey, don't deceive us, with no one in our world believing us, it stands between us, it's all gone wrong, get up now, come on. Open your heart, if you've got...
That's another song, like My Free Ride, that I came in and brought in, and then I think again Scott added a riff or something. But I wrote the words and the melody and the chords and that. And I guess that never got recorded the way My Free Ride did. I think that's just a kind of a 4-track demo that's on the thing. Later on, I think the Loud Family did a version of it, and it came out on like an EP or something. Might have that somewhere, but as far as us, we never properly recorded it.
Right,
that it just was done on the little, just done on the little Tascam thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember that Loud Family released that as the B-side of "Take Me Down" on a single.
Right, on a single. Yeah, with them doing it. Yeah,
one of the other covers on that's on this album is a cover of the 3 o'clock's "A Day in Erotica."
Liked that song. I he had made a little version of it. He had recorded a little 4-track version of it. I don't think I'm on it. I think it's just Scott, because he was just a big fan of the song. So
it's an amazing song. The 16 tambourine versions from the 3 o'clock is an amazing song.
Right, 16 tambourines. Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we were interested in his reworking of the song. So in his demo, and I think the liner notes said something along the lines that he was recording a version so that the band could do it live. So he was kind of working through. And a big part of the song for me is in the 3 o'clock version, after Danny hits the snare a couple times, you sing something along the lines of, "She's a mainstream offer girl that knows what to do."
Yeah.
And he leaves that part out, and it makes the song, his arrangement is, it seems so much sadder than the
it's all really melancholy.
Yeah, very melancholy. Yeah.
I'll have to go back and listen to his version. I haven't listened to it in a while, so.
Yeah, it was really interesting listening to his take on the song and how he was working with it. Again, it felt to me like it was a much more melancholy song. So, yeah. Which leads me to a question, Michael. In your friendship, did you notice Scott being somebody that was struggling with depression or?
Absolutely not. Really together, really funny, not terribly emotional.
Okay.
I was very surprised when that all happened, because this guy was almost like the last person I would have thought. So no, I and I spent a lot of time with him. I never real together and funny and, like I said, bright and career, a guy with a great career on top of being an artist, you know, then a guy with a, you know, family and two daughters. And so, yeah, you know, I don't think there's any type, you know, it could be anyone, just, right. You know.
Yeah, there's a song on here that's really, really difficult for me to listen to on the CD version called Slip My Wrists. It's a home demo version. I was telling Soraya earlier, I couldn't get through it the first time I listened to it. And I don't know if he was speaking personally or if it was channeling, you know, a character. But that, in light of everything that's happened, that was a very difficult song to listen to. And I think it's included for a very poignant reason. Among other things, and talking about this period of the band, but it's a hard one to listen to. There was a few songs on here that are like full recordings that I wanted to ask you about, Michael. And one of them was the song "Treat It Like My Own." Are you on that recording? Do you remember?
I'm playing the bass.
Okay, you are. It's really...
That was done maybe the same day as Water.
Oh, okay.
And I'm playing the... that was the song Scott wrote for the little Christmas thing.
Oh, okay, okay. Cool. And it starts...
That's also part of the Christmas thing.
If I'm not mistaken, the song starts off with a little sample or a version of the OJ's Money.
That's me playing that on the bass.
Oh, the OJ song?
That's me playing the OJ song on the bass.
Oh.
Money.
He was really good about adding in these samples at the beginning of songs. A lot of Game Theory and Loud Family songs. Usually the earlier songs.
I think
songs...
he was just like recording. He had the recorder on and was saying, you know, play the bass. We're going to get a sound. And I think I just started playing the Money by the OJs.
Oh, wow.
I think somehow he left that on or whatever.
So. I love that. Very cool. Very cool. Did you have any other questions about this particular release? I think
No. I really like it. It's real good. I'm glad. I think it came out well. So.
Yeah, we're very happy with it. I did have another question, Michael. So we were talking earlier. We put together this little playlist, and I added the version of Insect Collector that is noted as the 3 o'clock. On the Shonen Knife cover album.
I got in a lot of trouble for that.
Can you tell
really?
Us? Can you tell us about what that is?
From the, it's just me, but it was like, well, you know, you're going to get more attention from this track or being on there if you just Bill Bartel put that all out. And I said, just call it the 3 o'clock. It's me, you know. Just call it the 3 o'clock. I didn't think anybody would care, because you know, but then. Apparently, all the shit hit the fan. Why can't use that name? And you know, so I was just goofing around. You know, I don't call it the 3 o'clock. Who cares? You know, and so that's just what that was.
Is that all you? All the instruments?
I think it's me and other people from the whoever he had gotten together to be in that session.
That could, it ends with an amazing guitar riff or like a solo.
I think that's Bill Bartel.
Wow. Oh, he's tearing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We were just wondering about that.
And on continuing on this side note, we've noticed a few videos pop up on your Facebook feed and on the Permanent Green Light social media of you all in Earl Mankey's Psychedelic Shack. And, Are you guys working on new tracks? Are you thinking about letting
us
hear?
Yes, we are. Very excited. We got some new tracks getting done in there, and they're very. We're very excited about them. So.
All right. Well, we can't wait to hear what these are if these get released to the public.
they will eventually. So
okay,
that's all
okay.
I can say for now.
All right.
So when they do get released, can we invite you back to talk about them?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Excellent.
Michael, wow. I mean, this game theory release is fantastic, and we're really we're really happy to have talked to you today about your contributions, and also hear these stories about Scott Miller and Loud Family, and how you got to be a part, not just as a producer, but as a full-time component of game theory. And I don't know, can we say early Permanent Green Line, you know, because you guys start talking about names, and so maybe. I love the thought of you,
it's
Scott.
A lot of way my Free Ride could be a Permanent Green Line song. It has 100% to me.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You and Scott together were pretty powerful on that song, so...
Yes.
All right, Michael. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us again. We really, really appreciate your input. And this is a great album. Congratulations on it. You're a big part of it. And we really appreciate you taking time to talk to us a little bit about it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for talking to me about it.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you so much, Michael. You too.
And thank you, Soraya.
Stay healthy.
Stay well.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye, Michael.
You too. Definitely. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Jeff. Get to the damn chorus. Oh, no, get to the fucking chorus.
I know.
I love Michael Curcio. Yes. He's so honest.
I know.
Just get to the fucking chorus.
I know.
Get to the fucking chorus.
Not me. You know, I like to ramble and mosey my way around. I don't know if I've told you this, Soraya, before, but I'm the chatterbox in my relationship with my wife. I'm the one who likes to have long stories, as you could probably guess. And sometimes when my wife and I will be having conversations, I'll be about a minute, 2 minutes into a conversation. She's like, Jeff, get to the freaking point. And she's like, you've already lost. She goes, you've already lost me. So if you want me to know something, tell me what you're trying to say. And I'm like, well, I'm getting there. I'm just kind of buttering it up. Like I'm making a story here. And she's like, I don't need a story. I just need... Just give me the bullet points. That's all I need. So I am not a get to the chorus kind of person.
Oh my gosh. How amazing is it? Okay. Like I love the story about My Free Ride where Scott says, Michael, do you have songs? Of course I have songs. And then he gets to work and then he pens this song, which is a fantastic song.
I love it.
And the two of them on the, I mean, you know, the band in, as a whole, but the two of them together on this are really, really powerful. And it's really interesting to me to hear, you know, great songwriters talk about other great songwriters and how he and Scott, you know, they were in sync in a lot of ways. And how, I mean, how cool is that, that Scott Miller turns Michael Curcio on to big stuff?
Yeah, I never knew that.
I just thought that was pretty cool.
That was new information for me, hearing that today. Yeah. Yeah, so that was really cool. Hey, Soraya, I didn't ask you personally what your thoughts about this album and CD starting with a cover of the Beatles' All My Loving.
Look, I'll be honest with you because when you asked about it, I went back and I looked at my notes. And what I wrote down was, sweet cover. And I think it didn't bother me as much. I thought it was because it's just him alone. And it's really just kind of bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was an interesting way to start. And now listening to Michael Curcio talk about it and see how he saw it to start off, you know, and kind of providing this, you know, close your eyes, you know.
Yeah.
I'm there, but I'm not. And I thought that was, you know, that was very poignant. I see what you're saying, though. If this is a game theory album, and this is really a highlight of Scott Miller, yes, Show me his skill from the beginning. You know, bowl me over with that. I get it. I think I just thought it was a very sweet way to begin. And then, you know, look at what it jumps into.
Yeah.
It goes from All My Loving of Them, you know, Free Ride. And then we start to see kind of all this experimentation. And like you said, there's so many early versions of Loud Family.
Yep. Yeah.
On this. So I agree with you. I think I hadn't given it that much thought of how this is really representing that transition period for Scott Miller and in terms of where he was envisioning his band work to go. And I agree with you. It's definitely showing kind of the shift. And then we move into Loud Family and we start to see a lot of different things there. So, yeah, it's a very good release. I think it was well curated and
agree. I totally agree with you. Great,
I find it interesting what Michael said. You know, he goes, I was expecting someone to call and next thing I find out it's done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, for someone who was involved in so much of this early part, that's pretty interesting. He's got to have a ton more stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think
about this.
Musically, you said it best. Michael made a big impression on at least a few of these songs that are on this record. So his fingerprints are all over this release, both. So I don't know if we mentioned this yet, but there's an album version and a CD version. The CD version has a number of extra songs. I think 10 extra songs.
Right.
So of course I had to get both the vinyl and the CD versions. And sometimes you'll get CDs that have bonus tracks and they're like, kind of not worth getting sometimes. I definitely recommend this. There's quite a few songs on the CD only version that are totally worth having. We mentioned De Inerotica. That version's on here. And there's a version of Back of a Car, another Big Star song. It's a really, really good version. And then quite a few of the Loud Family songs. And I mentioned the song Slip My Wrist, which is only on the CD version, but totally worth having. Vinyl for vinyl fetish people like me. And then the CD, if you have to do one or the other, I recommend the CD because that's got all 24 tracks, not just the 14 that are involved in the vinyl. So for fans of Game Theory, Scott Miller, Loud Family, this is definitely a period of time that is important and worth checking out. I think Dan Valor for putting this together. Pat Thomas had some input on this. Cheryl Perlowski and Omnivore, thank you all for putting this together. And it was great to hear Michael's stories about this.
Always. I mean, I love listening to him talk. I could let him talk for like 10 hours and never be bored, ever.
Yeah, he's a great storyteller.
Oh, my gosh. And the thing is, you know, we barely skimmed the surface with Michael. So just leaves more to discover later.
But yep.
Yeah, if you're a Game Theory fan, this needs to be a part of your collection, 100%.
Yep, for sure.
Very well done. Jeff, you know, there never is a good way to segue out. So, gente, arrubiar, go get this and listen.
Yes, groove on, Paisley people. And for you songwriters, get to the fucking chorus.
One, two, three.